Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Classic rock singers Boss Scaggs and Michael McDonald will perform in the Koussevitzky Music Shed at Tanglewood in Lenox, Massachusetts, this Friday at 7 p.m. With a career that spans more than four decades, five-time Grammy Award winner, singer-songwriter Michael McDonald made his mark as a member of Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers before launching a successful solo career in the 1980s. McDonald has toured with Boss Scaggs before, and I began our conversation by asking about that double bill partnership.
Well, Boss and I have performed kind of a double header kind of a show for quite a while now. And for us, it's a great thing because, you know, it gets us on our toes. You know, Boss, his show is, he's just been one of those guys that always had the great band and highly professional, you know, sonically, everything, you know, seems to always have things at the top of their game, you know, whether it's the sound in the house, the musicianship on stage. His songs, of course, are the kind of songs that they shouldn't be played by anything less than a stellar band because they're you know, great material. Some of the best all-time R&B music I think Boz has written. To me, you know, Lowdown is one of the most classic R&B songs of all time, you know. So it's for us, great fun, and we always feel kind of, you know, like we got to bring our A game, you know, when we go out with Boz, and it's good for us, you know, for that reason. But I think for the audience too, he and I kind of meld together somewhere. You know, he started off in the '60s with some iconic bands, Steve Miller Band, and you know, has been largely known as a blues artist, you know. Starting with the Steve Miller Blues Band, and then, you know, in the '70s, you know, kind of merged into that kind of strange world of kind of more R&B artists, you know, and you know, kind of a, you know, A-list kind of white soul, you know, artist, and so his material spans a certain amount of time, and then, you know, I kind of came along with the Doobies around that same time as Silk Degrees. Silk Degrees and Taking to the Streets album came out the same year, I think. So, you know, for the audience, I think if they come there to hear some music from that era, you know, we're probably two good candidates, two good bands to kind of come here because that was kind of our time, you know, as solo artists was right there in the middle of the '70s. You know.
The band that you're currently playing with, how long have these members of the band been your band?
You know, bands are always that's always a changing landscape at best, you know. However, my guitar player and I have played together for well over 20, 25 years now, you know. Even some of the newer guys in the band have been with me now going on 6-7 years. Our newest member, Jacob Lowry, he's been with us at least 3-4 years now. Drea has been singing with us for a good 10 years now, I think. And Pat Coyle and I have been, he's been with our band. He showed up on the scene about, you know, 10 years ago or more. And so we've been together collectively, averaging it out about, you know, at least 10 to 15 years. And you know, with this band, they constantly surprised me, you know, like with the new album. I wasn't sure how we would approach it as a band live. Some of the material was, you know, it kind of happened in the studio, and I wasn't sure how, in fact, we would recreate it live. And the band really stepped up to the plate. And, you know, at this point, a lot of the stuff I'm enjoying playing live, almost more than I probably enjoyed recording it, but, you know, we had a great time recording it. But, you know, I was really pleasantly surprised at how well the band plays it live, you know.
Wide Open, released September 15th on BMG. The record features special guests, including Warren Haynes, Robin Ford, Marcus Miller, Branford Marsalis. How do you decide you want to invite people to guest on your album, and then how do you approach them to do so?
Well, you know, it's a very spontaneous thing as the record goes along. This record kind of happened probably wouldn't have happened, but for a chain of events that led up to it. You know, it was a very kind of a right turn at the right moment, or a left turn. It came from a very obscure beginning. You know, it was really a collection of demos that I had cut during my Motown period when I was recording those three albums for Motown. They were songs that I didn't want to forget. You know, I was writing, so I, in between doing the Motown records and touring, I went into the studio with my friend Shannon Forrest. We were kind of sharing a studio space at the time. And typically at the end of a long day, if I was in town and I had a song idea I wanted to, you know, log and get down so that I wouldn't forget it, you know, I would call him up and buy him dinner, and he would be nice enough to stick around after hours, and we would throw these song ideas down, and it's pretty rough demos. And most of those wound up being the tracks on this record. As you go along and we started to rebuild these tracks to a large degree, all of a sudden we would think, gosh, you know, Branford Marsalis would be the perfect guy on this track. Wonder if it's even remotely possible that we could get a hold of him. And so we would just, you know, we were like a bunch of kids trying to call up some movie star, you know. we'd get on the phone and just start calling around to people. You happen to know other musicians, right? And then we find somebody who actually played with them, and, you know, well, his manager is this guy, and we'd find the number, and we tracked Branford down, and we wound up connecting with him in California, in San Luis Obispo, of all places, which is a small town north of L.A. on the coast. There's a college up there, and Branford was doing a residency at this college, you know, recording with, I think, the jazz band there at the college. And we literally got in the car and drove up there when we were on the road with the Dukes of September. We were lucky enough, he was kind enough to make a day for us, and we went in this little bitty studio up there on the coast in this little coastal town. The fact that there'd even be a recording studio was remarkable enough, much less that we would get Branford Marsalis on tape, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and he was fantastic. I mean, he literally played that song in one take. He played it down once to kind of figure it out. The second time he played it, that was it. We almost felt kind of awkward, like, well, there's no really any reason to even do it again. It was, you know, it was just perfect, you know. And he agreed, and so we let him get back to his, you know, his what he was doing, and thanked him profusely, because we drove down the coast kind of in disbelief that we actually just did a session with Branford Marsalis.
Going back to something you just said about having a song idea and then being able to save it and remember it by recording it, in your career, can you think of a time when you had a song idea but you lost it?
Yeah. And if it's an idea of any real merit, it will usually come back around. You know, in my early days, I was never a very technically oriented musician. You know, even today, most of my song ideas, I sing into my iPhone. And then I've got like these 10,000 voice memos, you know, on my iPhone. I wouldn't even begin to know or to look for half the song ideas I've put down. You know, will the day ever come where I actually sit down and go through them? Because there's probably some decent ideas on it. But what I found is if I log them, it kind of constitutes the birth of the idea. At least it's somewhere. And then a couple times that I can remember, I'd go into my studio at night, and all of a sudden, an entire song would just pop out and seem to be like one of those gifts from beyond, you know, where, and I wasn't even sure I wrote it. You know, it was just like the song would kind of fall out of the sky. And I think, wow, that, you know, just kind of wrote itself, if you will, you know. Then I'd find some box of tapes maybe 6 months or a year later, and I'd go, you know, make a point to go through the cassettes or whatever they were, and all of a sudden, I'd find that song that I just wrote 6 months ago on a tape that I made 3 years before, and or at least some portion of it, some piece of it, you know. And I realized that, you know, well, this idea came to me quite a while ago, and I just threw it down, and somehow it worked itself out in my subconscious and came out in a more complete state here all these 3 years, 4 years later, you know. And that's happened to me more than once, you know. So I kind of treat songwriting like a, almost like a, not that my songs are that good, but for me, it almost has to be a subconscious experience, you know. I try not to force myself to finish any song unless I'm in that situation like in Nashville where you show up at somebody's house and you both kind of hit it cold. That's a fun experience too. And many times I've written some songs I would have never written otherwise, you know. I like to approach it from every different angle I can, but there's something about that letting a song kind of ferment and letting a song create itself that I'm drawn to when I write alone. I like to just kind of see where the song wants to go, and I don't mind just letting it sit for a few months or even sometimes a couple of years.
Michael McDonald will play the Kuzovitsky Music Shed at Tanglewood with Boss Skaggs on Friday at 7 p.m. That's June 30th. Wide Open will be released in September, September 15th on BMG. Michael McDonald, we are out of time, but I thank you very much. Have fun at Tanglewood.
Thanks, I appreciate your time.
Once again, Michael McDonald will share the bill with Boz Skaggs at Tanglewood on Friday at 7 p.m. Relevant links are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable.